Hello, and welcome back to the North Georgia Blue podcast, produced and distributed by the Fannin County Democratic Party. I'm your host, Meryl Clark, and we're getting into some good trouble today with our guest, Zay Brewer, Gen Z Democratic activist in Metro Atlanta. Welcome to the show, Zay. We're so happy you're here.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm so excited to be here, and I'm really honored to be here, actually.
Well, terrific. We're honored to have you. So let's let our listeners know a little bit about you. A Georgia native, Zay attends Kennesaw State University, or KSU, where he is a junior majoring in political science. He is a student leader, writer, activist, and advocate for a better Georgia and America. In 2020, he served as a fellow for the Georgia Democratic Party and is currently serving as president and chair of the KSU Young Democrats, student representative for the NAACP, chancellor of students, president of the American Red Cross on campus, and also sits on KSU's Student Activities Budget Advisory Committee. Goodness, Zay, when do you have time to study?
I get that question from everybody. I find time when I can.
Well, you've also received the United States Senate Youth Program Scholarship while still in high school and is one of two high school students to represent Georgia and was awarded the AJC Cup in high school. And that was in 2021, I believe.
Yes.
Zay served as an intern for the Gwinnett County Democratic Party and campaign intern for Congresswoman Carolyn Bordeaux. He currently has plans to attend law school after graduation and continue serving his country as an officer in the armed forces. Thank you for your service. And Zay hopes to be a public servant in our state one day. We should be so lucky. So let's dive right in. How and when did you decide to become an activist, and what sparked your interest in politics?
Well, I remember 2016, and this is kind of how I got involved in politics in particular. My parents were watching one of the Democratic debates, and I was just fascinated by the clashes between Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. And I also watched the Republican side. And I think that was definitely a interesting and a year that changed our country forever in the direction of it. So seventh grade me, I think I was about 12 or 13 in 2015, 2016, I watched the election, and I ended up bawling my eyes out when Secretary Clinton lost.
Oh.
And then for 2 years after that, I watched where the country was going under President Trump. Then in 2018, after Stacey Abrams was defeated the first time, I said, you know what? I'm going to try to get involved the next election cycle in 2020. And then COVID happened. And while COVID was a very horrible thing, and you know, it really affected me during my senior year, me being a person who loves school and loves learning and is an extrovert. Honestly, I probably wouldn't have gotten my real entry into politics because at the time, you know, I was still a minor. I couldn't drive yet. And so having all of that campaign stuff online, it really helped me get involved. And it was the first time I volunteered for campaigns and the Dems. And yeah, that's pretty much how I got into it. And then, like you said in my intro, in 2022, this election cycle, I ended up doing a lot more. Yet last year when I came to KSU, I actually started out serving as the event secretary before being elected president this year. And, you know, I was a campaign intern for Congresswoman Bordeaux, and I've gotten so much experience working as chair at KSU, and it's really been life-changing. And the interesting thing about it is I didn't even want it at first. How I even got it was kind of a big, I wasn't expecting it.
But it happened anyway.
Yes. Essentially, what happened is I was the youngest officer in the Dems last year at KSU. And I was the youngest. I was 18, just got here. And I also served as the youngest associate justice on the KSU Supreme Court in history. All the officers were like, hey, so we're graduating or we're not going to run again. So it's just yours. And I ended up having to run, and I got it. And I at first remember thinking when I was taking that oath to serve as party chair here, what have I gotten myself into? But I've grown to really like it. So many opportunities have come from serving just in this year alone. So I'm really grateful for it. But that is pretty much how I got into it.
Fantastic. Well, I'm happy to hear it, and they're lucky to have you there. So I wanted to ask you about your thoughts on the midterms and why none of our candidates broke 50% of the vote, your personal thoughts and your thoughts as a student activist, and what needs to change for Democrats to get statewide candidates elected?
I think, obviously, it was a big disappointment for Democrats, considering what happened in the midterms with their statewide candidates. You look at that ticket. There was so much talent, so much diversity, and so much experience, and so many qualified candidates. I met most of them because we actually hosted most of them here at KSU, and I ended up meeting a few others elsewhere, but so much talent. And I think the party needs to do a reevaluation of what is going wrong on our statewide end, in particular with the down ballot races. Now, I think the Senate race was an interesting thing, because I think what we're seeing is that Senator Warnock has some that natural appeal that people say that President Obama had. Mm-hmm. I think he has that, and people just trust him naturally. And so while he came so close to hitting that 50 against Herschel Walker, I think a lot of Republicans came out that day to vote against Stacey Abrams and just checked off Walker.
Gotcha.
My interpretation is that there were just a lot of frustrated Republicans who really approve of Kemp and they wanted to keep him there. And a lot of them just also voted for Walker. I don't think that will be the case for the runoff, though.
Right. And this will actually air after the runoff, just so you're aware.
Right.
But yes, it's very exciting to have Senator Warnock go back to the Senate. It's just so important. It really is.
It is.
And we need that extra padding, especially with the divided Senate. So it would be 50 plus one. That would make a huge difference. So let's chat about your work with Georgia Democrats.
Yes.
Tell us about your experience working with State Representative-elect Lisa Campbell for Georgia House District 35, your internship with Congresswoman Bordeaux, and what you're doing now for the Warnock campaign. Tell us about that.
Well, first off, for my friend Lisa Campbell, it was a real honor working with her and helping her get elected. The first time I spoke with her was over the summer, because the Dems at KSU, we want to prepare a series of forums. So we had a congressional one which featured Marcus Flowers, Antonio Daza, and Bob Christian. We also had a statewide one which featured Janice Laws Robinson, William Bodie, and Nikita Hemingway. Jen Jurton and Bee Nguyen sent representatives. But we also had a state legislature forum, and we basically invited about seven candidates from around Cobb, Marietta, Kennesaw, a little bit of Cherokee out. And we did that to help the students get a perspective on why local races are important. Lisa likes to emphasize that the seat that she just won was lost 2 years ago by, I believe, about 300-400 votes to Ed Setzler, who, by the way, is the author of the heartbeat bill.
Yes, I'm very familiar with Ed Setzler, unfortunately.
But Lisa's district, House District 35, KSU actually lies in that district. So my cabinet and I said, we're going to work with Lisa. We're going to help her win the seat. The seat is newly drawn. It favors her. And if she wins, she will ultimately be the one to represent KSU. So we attempted to host a debate about 2 weeks before Election Day for her and her Republican opponent, Robert Trim. And what essentially happened was they both agreed to do it on campus. And like a week before, Trim said he wanted to move the location. For what reason, we don't really know, because the location was actually a very big, it's an auditorium, but he ended up canceling and Lisa debated an empty podium, and that made a lot of news stories and it was a lot, but I canvassed a lot for Lisa. She ended up winning that seat. We had her out here just a couple days ago for the Warnock rally on KSU campus, and it's just been a real honor working with her. I'm glad to call her my friend, and I look forward to working with her for KSU's best interest and for Democrats. Now, the Bordeaux campaign back in the spring, that was a tough race. As you know, Lucy McBath defeated her in that primary. And that was a tough primary because the whole situation about it was just really, it was an uncomfortable thing because, you know, here you had these two great women who flipped two historically conservative districts in Georgia, pitted against each other largely because of Republican gerrymandering. And so it was a hard environment. Congresswoman Bordeaux kept her positivity up. She still had her spirits up, but unfortunately she lost that primary. But I don't think that she's done in politics at all. I think she still has a big future ahead of her.
Terrific. And what are you doing now with the Warnock campaign?
So we actually just had him on campus a couple days ago, on Monday actually, for a rally and meet and greet. It was our third attempt to get him here. And I guess three times was the charm, because we got him here and he gave a rousing speech. It was between 200 and 400 students came out. It was amazing. It was an honor hosting him. I handed him my memoir and my send a you certificate before he left. His campaign said they'll get it back to me. I think the rally really energized students. And the reason why is because what I heard from a lot of students was they felt like by him coming, it showed and it proved that he was there. And if he's reelected, he's going to represent the students and have our best interests at heart. He talked a lot about his time at Morehouse and what he calls a full faith scholarship. And I think that really resonated with a lot of students here.
I would have to agree that he's always been here for the people of Georgia and will continue to be here for the people of Georgia. So I have to backtrack for just a moment. You have a memoir?
No, I had Senator Warnock's memoir and I handed that and my United States Senate Youth Certificate.
Gotcha.
Because typically in that program, both of your senators sign the certificate. It's kind of a tradition, but the thing that happened was our program year was virtual because of COVID.
Okay, that makes more sense. Do you happen to have any numbers on how many Gen Z folks voted in the midterms?
I do not know off of the top of my head. I know in Cobb County alone in the general, it was over 10%, but I don't think it was exceptionally high. But I think that overall, they did turn out. Mm-hmm. And the problem that I saw with KSU with our voter turnout, what's kind of hard on our end for both parties, really, but really for the Dems because of SB 202, is that KSU is largely a commuting school. So essentially, most students who go here live in Georgia and they come here and some weekends, you know, they'll go home. But anyway, most of them live in Georgia.
Sure.
And what will happen is they will keep their voter registration in their home counties. Mm-hmm. And for a lot of students who live, let's say, Albany or Savannah, getting back a couple hours on a weekend, not only just in the fall semester, but even with this runoff in a week, that's going to be really hard for a lot of them. And I even realized that myself, you know, thankfully I'm registered in DeKalb. So Snellville is a Gwinnett city, but it's one small part of it that's still in DeKalb County. But I live in that part that's in DeKalb. And I was luckily able to vote Sunday morning right before I came back to campus. But I realized that it's really hard for a lot of students because, again, to make a, let's say, 3-hour trip home during the first week of finals, that's really tough.
I'm sure that makes a lot of sense. So turning our attention to the Georgia NAACP,
yes.
How are you working to get young students of color involved in the political process?
The interesting thing is that right after we finish this, I have a KSU NAACP meeting where I'll be essentially talking about what happened during the midterms. A big part that I've been focusing on in the KSU NAACP during my time as political action chair has been education. And I find going to Lithonia High School, which is largely a majority minority school, Black and brown students there, I found that a lot of students didn't really care to get involved and they didn't want to get involved. One, because they felt politics doesn't affect anybody. Or two, because they simply just didn't know. And that's the sentiment I get from a lot of students here at KSU as well, is that a lot of students just don't know. Thankfully, many do. When the Dems, on behalf of the Dems, when I hosted a voter registration drive, most people that we talked to were already registered when they were planning to vote. So I think that it's improving, but I've been focusing a lot on education and why these races matter, what each office does. And what I'm going to be talking about tonight is what are the consequences of these midterms for the next 2 years for minorities, such as Black people, Hispanic and Latinos, Native Americans, and Asians. I'm going to be talking about that tonight. But education is something I've strongly been focused on.
Do you think it's apathy on the part of students?
I think that the big reason why is because a lot of young people feel like there isn't anybody for them in government. Mm. I'm pretty sure, you know, I'm a political nut. So I'll just randomly talk about, let's say, the Senate with my friends or the House of Representatives. And a lot of them will be like, they're so old. Mm-hmm. They say things like, nothing really gets done for us because we don't have anybody representative of us. And that same message I don't only get from just young students in general, I get from students of color. And that's one big reason why I was largely impressed in 2018 and in 2020, because the House of Representatives is more diverse than ever. And I think that it's just going to take a lot of students and young people to realize that they matter and that they can make change happen and even possibly run for office themselves, or, you know, just get involved, just get out and canvass or talk to people. The candidates win the elections, but they win because of small volunteers, because of people like me and people like a 60-year-old retired volunteer. The ground game is talking to people. And I think tying into that, that is why we largely have lost ground in rural America and rural Georgia as well, because a lot of those people feel forgotten.
And can you blame them?
No.
Because representation matters. And when you do have octogenarians running the country, it does present a problem.
Right.
For younger generations. Now, at the time of this recording, Representative Hakeem Jeffries was just elected minority leader of the House going into 2023, which is very exciting.
Yes.
He's the first Black leader to be elected into that position. What are your thoughts on that? And he's a younger guy. He's active. He's progressive. He's energetic. Do you think that might kickstart some young folks into getting involved?
Yeah, very inspiring. And I think, honestly, he was the best pick.
No doubt.
To succeed our great champion speaker, Nancy Pelosi. And I have great respect for Speaker Pelosi because I think she realized that it's time to pass the torch. And I think that's what we need more of in the country is people need to come to their senses and realize that when it's time for them to let a new generation lead. I think Hakeem Jeffries, you know, for years now, they've been saying he was going to be Nancy Pelosi's successor. I'm glad he is. He's a fresh face, young. And so I think that this new team is definitely going to inspire people because the thing is about them is that not a lot of people know about them.
Mm-hmm.
I'll be honest. I know who Hakeem Jeffries is, but I haven't really done my research into, you know, his life.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, I think that's refreshing.
Right.
Because now we learn about these people. You know, for years, people knew who Nancy Pelosi was.
Sure.
They knew her as the first woman speaker, the one who won the House back after, I believe, 14 years because of George W. Bush's unpopularity. And so I'm really excited for his leadership in the House and this new set of party leaders have.
Let's drill down to Georgia, to our state. What's it going to take for us to win the state? On the statewide level, with the General Assembly and statewide offices, et cetera, from your perspective as an experienced and active Gen Z politico, what are your thoughts?
I think that what Georgia Democrats have been focused on really since the 2016 election, I think that they've been focused on winning suburban voters, right? Cobb, Gwinnett, Rockdale, counties like that. Counties that historically have been red and were, again, a big contribution to President Biden winning the state, Senator Warnock, Senator Ossoff winning, Congresswoman McBath, Congresswoman Bordeaux winning. They have flipped. They're for us now. And in most of those statewide races, the Democrats won by comfortable margins in those counties. And also on the state legislature side, we're starting to win more and more, you know, including House District 35, Elisa Campbell just flipped a big seat. I think now what the goal should be is to touch the rural voters because the rural voters are the reason why Donald Trump was president for 4 years. The rural voters felt heard by him. And what's interesting about it is that he never lived a day like them in his life, but made them feel heard. They felt heard by him.
Mm-hmm.
And they've had somebody for the first time in a long time that made them feel like he's for us.
Right.
We need to start campaigning in rural counties. We need to start trying to contest rural House districts, rural Senate districts. And ultimately, that's how the Democrats are going to take back the state. They have to keep the strength up in Atlanta, in the suburbs of Cobb, Gwinnett, and they have to start contesting rural areas. If the Democrats want any chance of taking back the state, you don't have to win these rural counties, but you can't keep getting blown out 80-20 in these rural counties.
And that's what's happening.
Right.
So it's distressing to say the least. And
you need both. You need to keep the urban support and the suburban support high, but you have to contest rural areas.
Right. Because there are more rural areas than there are Metro Atlanta, correct? I mean,
right.
We have a very big state. It's 159 counties, and it's one of the larger states in America, in our nation. And it seems that a lot of the Metro Atlanta folks are not concentrating on the rest of the state, which is where all the support comes from. Well, I wouldn't say all the support, but where a lot of support comes from for Republican policy. So being in a rural area ourselves up here in the 9th Congressional District, I completely agree with you. And I'm hoping hoping that the Democratic Party of Georgia is listening to this podcast, because it's so important to concentrate on other areas of the state.
Oh, absolutely.
So moving on, can you elaborate a bit on your writing background and future plans after you graduate?
Yes. So I actually just became a guest contributor with KSU Sentinel, which is our school newspaper.
Congratulations.
Thank you.
That's exciting.
Thank you so much. So I've been contributing. I actually had an interview by the KSU Sentinel recently regarding the American Red Cross and blood donations. But I just wrote my first opinion piece talking about why Republicans flopped the midterms. And I've been writing those. I write for a friend of mine, her organization called Loud Women, which talks about empowering women. And I tend to give my perspective on how young men can help empower women politically and socially. So I do a little bit of writing there. And I am working on an op-ed for Senator Warnock's government office.
Fantastic. In all your spare time, right?
Yes. But I enjoy it, actually.
What led you to get involved with the American Red Cross? And thank you for all you do. I'm a regular blood donor, so I believe strongly in their mission. Tell me about that.
So, interesting story with this as well. Over the summer, I realized KSU is one of the only colleges in the state without a Red Cross chapter. And I was a little frustrated about that. I was asking why. And so I contacted people in student activities and all of that. And they were like, we actually had one, but it's been inactive for 4 years. But if you want to restart it, you can go ahead. Congratulations. You're the president now. I was like, oh, okay. And so
you have your mandate. Yes.
Right. So I took it. It's been a little hard getting it all restarted. It's hard restarting an organization in general. Mm-hmm. It's been really hard, especially with the midterms this year. And also just kind of some bureaucratic stuff with getting the organization re-registered on campus. So we didn't really get to do much this semester, unfortunately. But I really am looking forward to getting it up and running strong next semester. We've already been making plans to do collaborations with other organizations on campus, such as some of the Greek organizations, other organizations. So I'm really excited for it. I actually got involved in the Red Cross for the first time when I donated blood in high school. And I just am really fascinated by what the Red Cross does. And I like to help the world politically. But the Red Cross helps me help the world just in general in a way I can just help people with basic things.
And also saving lives.
Yes.
There is a lot to be said for that. So pre-show, we had talked about your vision for a new blue South.
Yes.
What does that mean? And how will that come to fruition?
What it's going to take is, again, we have to use the strategy that I stated earlier in the sense of every one of these states have to start touching rural voters. I think it's very clear in North Carolina and Georgia and Texas, even, that we have made crucial ground in southern suburban areas, but we're not going to win unless we start contesting rural areas and having the Republicans have a run for their money in these rural areas.
And when you say contest, it's not in the traditional form of contesting an election result. You're talking about actually presenting a real contest.
Exactly.
In the rural areas. Okay, I just wanted to make that clear. Go ahead.
Yes. And so I think a lot of these states are flippable. I mean, you look at the demographics, the southern region is probably, if not first, second, I'm not for sure, but it's a very diverse region. Florida, Georgia, North Carolina, Texas, Louisiana. These are all diverse states, states that the Democrats should be doing a lot better in. And a lot of these in states like Louisiana, North Carolina, they have Democratic governors. So Democrats can win there. It's just taking the strategy and competing with the Republicans, putting serious challenges against them. You got to think about it. A lot of these states like Louisiana, 8 years ago in 2014, it had a Democratic senator in Mary Landrieu. And in 2014, North Carolina had a Democratic senator in Kay Hagan. So I think what's happened is, especially since the Trump era, after 2016, when we saw how much Trump won by, I think the national party just gave up on. And don't get me wrong, I think that this has been the result of a long time of rural areas being feeling forgotten by Democrats, because we saw this trend happening over the decades. But I think that that's what has to happen.
So demographically, and I will say this, and I'll just be perfectly blunt about it. Demographically, rural areas are vastly different than metropolitan areas.
Very true.
So is it going to take a conservative Democrat, a moderate Democrat? How do we talk to and I'll be blunt, older white rural voters who consistently vote against their own self-interest.
Right.
How do we fix our messaging in that arena?
I think that Democrats need to be talking about the right issues with older white seniors. And what I mean by that is not ignoring the other critical issues that affect everyone else in the entire country, but talking about issues that pertain to them, such as healthcare, such as the economy. You know, a lot of these seniors are living on retirement pay. And not only just rural white older seniors, rural whites in general overwhelmingly vote Republican.
Right.
And so I think that it's just about, again, not only making your presence known, but talking about things that they are actually going to care about.
So kitchen table issues.
Kitchen table issues.
Bread and butter. Yep.
Right.
And that's something that we don't tend to do.
Exactly.
Yes, I agree with you. That needs to change. And I'm hoping, again, that the Democratic leadership in the state is paying attention.
Right. And Senator Warnock, I think since the race got called for a runoff, he's been doing exactly that. I actually went to one of his rallies in Cherokee County. So I think the Georgia Democrats in general are starting to understand that you need to start going to these areas. I mean, Cherokee County, red county. But that visit, it could energize a lot of people. But I think we need to go beyond that and not just doing one or two rallies. We need to consistently be everywhere in the state.
Agreed. It takes a lot of resources, though, again.
Yeah. And if you even look at Georgia 14, Marjorie Taylor Greene won, and by a big margin. But Marcus Flowers shifted that district 5 points to the left.
That's helpful. I believe he garnered a bit over 30%.
Exactly.
So we're slowly making inroads.
Right. And slowly just take that strategy, just gradually keep chipping at it. If you keep chipping at it, let's say over the next 10, 20 years, you're going to be competitive in these places. You're going to even win a lot of these places.
Right. Well, we recently held an election panel, which that episode is now available across all platforms. But the election panel was with three Democratic leaders, including our own Doug DeMura, chair of the Fannin County Democrats, talking about this very subject and how statewide Democrats tended to ignore the number one issue, which was inflation.
Yes.
For most voters in Georgia, and they never discussed it. They never talked about it. I never heard them talk about it.
Right.
So that is definitely a strategy deficit, I would say.
For sure.
That we need to work on.
Yeah, I think that the Democrats need to start talking about issues like that more. A lot of these issues that Republicans are winning on are education, economy, and crime. And these are three issues that the Democrats have a better perspective on. I mean, it's largely known that the Republicans' economic beliefs are very unpopular. That's just been known for decades. But what the Republicans have been doing is taking the shift to social issues as well. And so the Democrats, we do really good on campaigning on the social issues, but stuff like inflation, we need to really be talking about our plans for that, how we're going to fix it. We need to be talking about crime, talking about education a lot more.
I would have to completely agree with you on all of those points, because we do tend to discuss overarching social issues and not get down to the nitty gritty with most voters.
Yeah, because we are not competing with Republicans in a lot of these areas, the Republicans are just telling a lot of these rural voters a bunch of baloney, a bunch of nonsense, and they believe it. And you know why? It's because we're not there to say, well, hold on a minute. That's not the case. This is what we want for you. This is what we're trying to do for you.
Right. We should take every talking point they have and dispute it.
Right.
You know, it's all disputable.
Yes.
So that definitely needs to be done. Well, Zay, I could talk to you all night. We're just so damn lucky to have you. That's all I can say. And
I appreciate it. I'm really honored to be here. I'm glad you all invited me here. And I'm only 19, turned 20 in January, but I really look forward not only now, but throughout my life to helping others and making this country and state better.
Well, you're definitely the one to do it. And we'll definitely have you back on the show as well. So if someone wants to learn more about you, volunteer, or just get to know you better, where would you send them? Do you have a website, or where can people go?
I do not have a website yet. I have a LinkedIn. I have a Twitter. I have an Instagram.
Okay. I will share with our listeners that Zay is spelled Z-A-E.
Yes.
So people can at least find you online.
With an E, not a Y.
Right. It's a great name.
My Instagram is just at Zay Brewer, Z-A-E Brewer, B-R-E-W-E-R. My Twitter is The Zay Brewer. And my LinkedIn is A Brewer, so you can find me pretty easily.
Okay, terrific. And finally, and I ask all my guests this question, they tell me it's the hardest question to answer, but tell us a fun fact about yourself, something not necessarily related to your political work or even your work with the Red Cross, which we thank you for immensely, but tell us something fun and interesting just about Zay.
I really love doing stuff like painting. I like to paint. I don't have a lot of time to do it anymore, but I love to paint when I can. I do all this political work, but I'm still a college kid. I do stuff like play games still. You know, I hang out with my friends all the time and I always make time for it. I don't know how I do it. A lot of people ask me that all the time, but I have a lot of hobbies. I like to paint. I like to play video games when I can. I like to do little projects, you know, like make Christmas cards during the holidays and stuff. Yeah.
You are truly a Renaissance man, Zay.
But one thing that's definitely kept me going is running. I love to run.
Oh, there you go. Yes, the endorphins.
Yes.
Endorphins really make a difference, don't they? Well, thank you, Zay, for joining us today and sharing more about your critical work to advance democratic goals and policy. I'm Meryl Clark, and on behalf of our team, I'd like to thank everyone for listening to the North Georgia Blue podcast. To learn more about us and the work that we're doing, visit us online at FannonCountyGeorgiaDemocrats.com. Share the North Georgia Blue podcast with your friends and family. Be sure to subscribe and follow. And if you enjoy our podcast, be a founding patron and friend of the show at NorthGeorgiaBluePodcast.com/patron with three different giving levels to choose from, offering cool swag, recognition on the show and website, and valuable gift cards to help us continue getting into more good trouble.